Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit. Bandwidth for the Tech Guy is provided by CacheFly. CacheFly.com. Hi, this is Leo Laporte, and this is my Tech Guy podcast. This show originally aired on the Premier Networks on Sunday, August 28th, 2016. Happy birthday, Henry, my son. This is episode 1318. Enjoy. The Tech Guy podcast is brought to you by Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Rocket Mortgage brings the mortgage process into the 21st century with a fast, easy, and completely online process. Check out Rocket Mortgage today at quickenloans.com/techguy. And by Blue Apron. Blue Apron will send you fresh, high-quality ingredients to cook delicious meals with simple, step-by-step instructions right to your door. See what's on the menu this week and get your first three meals free with free shipping by going to blueapron.com/twit. Well, hey, how are you today? Leo Laporte here, the Tech Guy. Time to talk computers and the internet. Home theater, we talk about that a lot. You know, surround sound, big screen TVs, digital photography, taking pictures, virtual reality, autonomous vehicles, anything with a chip in it. 88 smartphones, of course, smart watches. 8888-ASK-LEO, that's the phone number, 888-827-5536. That's toll-free from anywhere in the U.S. or Canada. You can also Skype in if you're outside that area. 888-827-5536. Most important thing, if you were to remember one thing from this tiny little spiel, would be the website, techguylabs.com. And I mention that because everything else is there, including the phone number and a link to our fine chat room at irc.twit.tv. And what else? Well, answers to every question we've ever received since I started doing this show in 2004, plus audio and video of every show since 2004, 1,318 shows. What? If you started listening today, I don't know, it would reach halfway to the moon. That's what. So let's talk tech, 8888. Ask Leo, that's my number. Public service announcement. Update your iOS phone or tablet, your iOS device. Update it. Update it because there's a terrible, horrific flaw that, funnily enough, was discovered by an Israeli company but not revealed to Apple or the public, but instead sold to bad guys. Well, maybe not bad guys. A government. And then used by that government to spy on a dissident in that government. And, heck, now it's in the public, and we got to all be cautious about this. It could affect you just by you get a text message with a link in it. You click the link, go to the website. Might even say, you know, the text message is from your grandma or from your lawyer or from the IRS, something that would get you to go, oh boy, I better click on this. You know, a lot of times it's from Apple, or pretends to be. This is Apple Computer. Your lost iPhone has been found. Click this link to log in to find my iPhone. I've got that one. Well, now it's more than just stealing your password. These actually could take over your phone and steal everything. In fact, turn your phone into the ultimate spy device with a camera and microphone on it, and a GPS. It pretty much knows where you are, what you're doing, who you're talking to at all times. Nice. Apple did put out a patch, 9.3.5. And, of course, if you're a tester for the next iOS, iOS 10, you're apparently already protected. But public service announcement. The invitations did go out to Apple's event September 7th. September 7th. So let me see what the invitation says. I actually don't get them, you know, but it's kind of pathetic. Every time I hear that my colleagues have received an Apple invitation, I go to my email. It's really sad. It's humiliating. And I search, did Apple Did Apple send me anything? No. They didn't send me anything. Apparently, though, and I still haven't got anything. Sad. Poor, sad, humiliating. No, I don't really care. But in fact, in a way, it's I'm gonna interpret it differently. It's a badge of honor. It's a badge of honor. Apple knows who I am, but they decide not to tell me. So I now actually have the invitations gone out. Maybe they haven't. Maybe that's just a trick to get me to look at my email. If the event September 7th, we're pretty sure it will be. That's a week from Wednesday. They would go out actually this week. What would that event be? Well, an iPhone. The latest rumors, iPhone 7 and 7 Plus, just like it was 6S and 6S Plus last year. The sketches and leaks we've seen, and we have seen quite a few because, you know, they've been, if they're going to announce it on the 7th, a week from Wednesday, and they're going to, which means usually that you could pre-order it, and this is the rumor, on the 9th, a week from Friday, for delivery 2 weeks after that on the 23rd. If they're going to do all of that, they've got those factories in China cranking them out. They've got millions and millions. They probably, the first shipment's already on the boat. Or the 747. They actually, I think they what they do is they take over jumbo jets and they fly out giant crates of these thousands and thousands of phones at a time. But if you think about it, typically an iPhone launch, you're going to sell, you know, 5 million to 15 million in the first weekend. So you got to have, they got to be somewhere in on the way. They're not making them today. They made them last week, last month. So it's hard to control that, you know, Chinese pipeline. There's workers there who will, for a appropriate payment, whip out their Android phone and take a quick picture of that iPhone. So we know a few things. We know, for instance, no, at least on one of the phones, no headphone jack. It's possible that the Plus will not have a headphone jack, but they'll make one that does. I'd be shocked if Apple eliminated the headphone jack across the whole line. I think they'll give the customer a choice and then see what happens. See if people go, oh, no headphone jack. I've got to have that one, which I don't think will happen, but you never know with Apple. You know, people love their iPhones. Oh, if Apple says a headphone jack's a bad thing, I don't want one. Don't want to be old-fashioned. So they'll also have a dual-lens camera, and that's interesting. Now, we can only hypothesize why the camera has two lenses, but modern thinking indicates it would not be a stereoscopic camera with three dimensions. No, much more likely a camera that takes two pictures, one in color, one in black and white, and uses the data from the black and white lens to do stuff computationally to improve the quality of the main image. That's what everybody suspects. That's the thought. We also suspect... What? That's about it. It's going to look a lot like the old iPhone. Don't expect new case designs or new screen sizes. And we've seen enough of iOS 10 to know that it's, you know, it's going to be fairly similar. You know what the funny thing is? The funniest thing of all to me is the most exciting part. And you watch in the announcement on September 7th. The most exciting part of the new iPhone is going to be messages. The ability to send all sorts of graphical, you know, they have invisible ink. You can send a message and you say, make this invisible ink. And then your honey gets it and it's just sparkling, invisible. You can't see any text. She goes, oh, what's that? And she swipes across and it goes, bling, I love you. Or, will you marry me? Oh, text that gets bigger. Shines lights like the Hollywood, you know, the Hollywood spotlights, like the 20th Century Fox spotlights. All sorts of effects. That's going to be the big thing. Because, let's face it, phones are the smartphone is pretty much good. It's there. At this point, you're putting fins on a Cadillac. At this point, it's all chrome. You got the engine. You got a very, very powerful engine. It will be a new processor, the A10. And I'm sure Apple will say, it's the fastest processor we've ever made. Fine. Fine. I feel like my iPhone's not that slow. Is it slow? Do you feel like you're, oh, I wish my iPhone were fast. No. The fastest processor we've ever made. And they'll show a game, you know. Electronic Arts will come on and show some driving game. And look how fast. Whoa. Anyway, September 8th. It's not written in stone. It's written in gravel. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. I want a phone with fins. That would be cool. That's my song. You're playing my song. I was listening to this on the way in. Thank you so much. You picked right up on that. Nathan Staten, our musical director. You know why I was singing this song? Because here's a guy. He's a nice country guy. He said, if I could just, all I could do is hunting and fishing and loving every day, I'd be happy. Wouldn't have to work for a living. And I was thinking, yeah, I'm not big on hunting and fishing, loving every day. I could do that. But you know what? If I were going to write that song and say, talking about computers every day, talking about and loving. You're asking me something now? That's what I want to do. Hunting? No. Talking computers every day. 8888 Ask Leo. That's the phone number. Hello to Kim Schaffer in the Witness Protection Program, deep within the bowels of the new studio. Hello.
Good morning. I can't tell when we're on the air anymore, so.
I don't blame you. You have no idea. You just hear me talking, and that's okay. You have been answering the phones, though, even though you didn't know that we were hunting, fishing, and loving
and
every day.
I've been singing that song.
I think I have a pretty darn good voice.
I like the fact that you're
hunting, fishing every day. So you've been lining up calls, even though you had no idea that there was going to be a show on.
No, I knew there was going to be a show
on. Oh, okay.
I didn't know we were back.
I should explain, because people are wondering, what are you talking about? We're in a new studio. This is our first weekend in the new Tech Guy Studios. We call it the East Side Studios, because we're on the east side, or northeast side of this little town. And the old studios, it was great, because you were looking through a plated glass window at me.
Now I'm looking at a monitor.
Now you see nothing.
No, I can see you.
Yeah, I can't see you unless I, turn on your camera. So it's a weird, it's a kind of remote control. It's a call screening by wire, we call it.
You could do this from home.
You know what? You could, couldn't you?
Yes, I could.
Okay, don't get any ideas now. So who should I speak with on the telephonic device here?
Bernardi in San Pablo.
All right.
Some questions about MacBook Pros.
Okay, you'd like me to start with Bernardi, huh?
Bernardi.
All right. I could do that. He's in San Pablo or he's in San Paulo? San Paulo. Are you in Brazil?
Yep, I'm in Brazil. Brazil, San Paulo.
See, when you say San Pablo, I think you're down the road. You're in Brazil. Nice. Welcome.
Yep.
It's a thrill to talk to you.
Yeah, same thing here. Long time listener. Thanks for taking my call. It's awesome talking to you, man.
Oh, wow. Okay. Brazil, people don't. Now, we all were watching the Olympics, so we all kind of know about Rio and so forth. But I think what people don't know about Brazil is it is one of the highest tech countries in the world.
It is.
There's a huge tech conference there every year. It's the biggest tech conference in the world. It beats CES hollow. The government itself has embraced open source software, which is one reason the open source community has regular meetings in Brazil. So you guys, I'm a fan of Brazil.
Oh yeah,
nice
job. We also have hackathons.
Yep.
Hackathons. I don't know if you're aware of that. Yeah, it's just amazing. Yeah, thanks for taking my call, Leo.
Well, thank you.
So here's the thing. I'm a Linux user. I do Integros, Ubuntu. I'm actually a Linux system administrator here.
Love it.
And
as I said, Brazil's embraced open source, which is fabulous.
Yes, it is. So it was really awesome to see when you got that System 76 machine.
Yeah.
I even retweeted that.
Oh, nice.
It was really cool. So I'm thinking about getting a new computer. I just sold my Dell Vostro, and I think I want to go with a MacBook. And, yeah, I'm going to dual boot with Linux on it.
All right.
And the thing is, a new MacBook Pro with the Retina display here, 15-inch, costs $10,000.
If you make the conversion,
yeah, if you make the conversion, that's what it costs. And I'm not willing to spend that kind of money.
That's crazy. It's four times what it would cost in the States.
Oh yeah, it's the price of a brand new car over here.
So don't people just have a friend in the U.S. buy one for them and mail it down?
Exactly, and that's exactly what I'm gonna do. I have a friend who's going on September 10th, and I was thinking that maybe I'm gonna buy a refurbished one, and he's gonna bring back at September 21st.
That'll look used. That's good. No one will question that at customs. They'll go, yeah, it's my personal laptop. Why am I helping break the law of Brazil? I apologize.
No, it's not breaking the law.
I'm pulling a Ryan Lochte. I'm so sorry. Brazil, I apologize. All right, but I understand at $10,000, that's criminal on Apple's part. That's ridiculous.
It is ridiculous. So I'm thinking, do I buy right now a laptop and have it delivered to his place, or do I wait for next week?
Well, you said refurbished, so next week they will not announce, in my opinion. Again, it's all speculation, but in my opinion, they won't announce laptops next week, because next week is all about the iPhone and possibly Apple Watch 2, and they don't want to. That's their money maker. That's 80% of Apple's revenue comes from the iPhone. They're not going to mess with that. They will do either another announcement. I think they'll do another announcement if they have some significant improvements, which it sounds like they do. But you're not buying a new MacBook Pro, so you're not going to benefit from that until there's some in the refurb channel, which will take a month or two.
Correct. But I was thinking maybe if the price drops,
well, that's
would
okay.
be a good idea.
That might be, right. That's right. You might get a better deal. And you may even start seeing that soon, because people, I think it's widely agreed there'll be a new MacBook Pro in the fall. So this might be the time. And because you want to run Linux on it, frankly, the old MacBook Pros, there's nothing wrong with them, and they are old. Apple hasn't updated them in 2.5 years. So they are already, a brand new one's already 2.5 years old. Thank you, Apple. But the reason is Intel isn't doing much with the chips. There's not a whole lot of reason to get a new one. So, and if you're running Linux, you don't care, because Linux runs great on older hardware. In fact, it's better on older hardware because there's better support for it. In fact, getting Linux on one of the new MacBooks would be a challenge, because it's going to take a while for the community to figure out what you need to do to make with the new MacBook.
Exactly what I heard. I listened to a podcast, a Linux podcast from the Jupiter Broadcasting Network.
Oh, that's a great show.
Linux Action.
I love those guys.
It is.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's the best. I think that's the best Linux podcast out there. It's the only reason I don't do one is because they're doing them.
That's awesome to hear. I bet they're going to be proud to
hear that. They own, well, they, I know they listen. So, yeah. Yeah, they own that.
Yeah. Yeah. So, 2 weeks ago, one of the guys, Chris Fisher, he got one of his MacBooks. It's a late 2013 model. And he put Linux on it, and it's working flawlessly.
That's good, because that's what you want. You want to follow in the path. You don't want to invent it. You want to follow in the path of somebody who's done this. Hey, we got a break. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Obrigado. How do you say goodbye? How do you say goodbye in Portuguese? Should I say Portuguese or Brazilian?
It's Portuguese. It's Brazilian Portuguese.
I'm going to say Brazilian. Yeah, it's got to say Brazilian. It's a Brazilian now. It's not Portuguese.
Goodbye in Portuguese, it's the same as in Italian, as hi and goodbye in Italian.
Ciao.
Yep.
Ciao.
That's it.
I have never been to Brazil. I've got to go. I've been all around. I've been everywhere in South America except Brazil.
Oh, you got to come, Leo. You got to come over here.
It's going to be, I think what it is, such a big country, I think I was going to spend the whole trip in Brazil instead of, so I went to Argentina and Paraguay and Chile and Peru. And so I did all around you, but I didn't go to Brazil. So I got to do that.
That's awesome.
I think listen to those guys. They know what they're talking about. The real issue is, getting it on a PC is a lot easier than getting it on a Mac. Apple really does unusual stuff, particularly with the hardware. So you've got to follow in the footsteps, and you've got to find somebody who says, yes, it's working great. Because a lot of times everything will work except, you know, one thing, the camera, the trackpad or whatever. So because those are Apple has to provide the drivers, and then the open source community has to reverse engineer them and...
Exactly. And I've heard that for the late 2013, they already have the library for the backlit keyboard and the light sensor on the screen. And
I was using the Synaptics driver on my PCs, and it's not a very good driver. LibInput, the open source driver, is 10 times better. So I started using LibInput on all of my laptops, and they're so much better than the native drivers. A lot of times that's the case. You know, the Linux community is kind of amazing.
Yes, they are. They are. Yeah. It's incredible.
Are you a student? What do you do in São Paulo?
I'm 32 years old. I work as a Linux system administrator. I work for a hosting company, Dutch hosting company that is huge, not huge, but medium sized in Brazil.
Do you use WhatsApp?
I use WhatsApp a lot. And did you hear what they did like four times in the last?
Yeah, we've been talking about it nonstop. Yeah. It's a fascinating story of a government trying to shut down something that the people use. And I think the people keep winning.
Yeah. And, you know, WhatsApp has nothing to do. You know, the government wants the conversations, but they're all encrypted. You know, they can deliver the encrypted conversations, but the government can't do anything about it. You know,
they hate it.
Read those conversations.
Yeah, they hate it.
Yeah.
And by the way, I think I'm being corrected, and they're absolutely right in the chat room. It's not Apple that's charging $10,000. Most of that is tariff to the Brazilian government. Apple needs to do is do what Foxconn did, which is open a plant in Brazil and make the laptops there.
Yeah, they actually did, but they only do the phones here.
Right.
Foxconn. Yeah, but no MacBook.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Yep. Well, Leo, I appreciate your call. I appreciate you taking my call, and it was really nice.
Bernardi, so nice to talk to you.
It's really good. I've been listening to your show for years. I'm going to call all my friends now. They're going to listen to the show, and I'll be here. It's going to be cool.
Awesome.
It's going to be cool. Thanks.
And you see this sticker that I have on my Dell, my Dell running Linux, my XPS 13, Linux Action Show.
I saw it. the guys actually took a picture from one of your shows. And they put it on Twitter, and everybody went nuts.
That's the Dell XPS 13. This actually is a great Linux laptop because of Dell's Sputnik program. They do a really good job of making laptops that work beautifully.
I was thinking about getting one of those, but 13 inches, I don't know,
get
man.
The 15. Get the Dell. I don't know what it costs down there, but the Dell XPS 15. And you don't have to get the Ubuntu Developer Edition. You could just get the regular one because it's the same hardware, as far as I could tell. This one's the Ubuntu Edition. I got the Ubuntu Edition in 2013, and then 2014. I got a regular one. It runs it beautifully. So, and I don't use Ubuntu. I use Arch. I use Antergos.
Yeah, Antergos. Yeah,
I love Antergos.
That's what I use too.
Yeah, I love it. It makes Arch so easy.
Oh yes, it's Arch for the. For the simple person.
For the lazy man. Hey, I got to run. Take care, Bernardi.
Okay.
Bye-bye.
Thank you, Leo. Bye-bye.
Our show today brought to you by Rocket Mortgage. Got to say hi to the Rocket Mortgage folks. All of our advertisers, I would say, are the reason they advertise on The Tech Guy and our other podcasts is because they know you're a technically literate audience, right? You're interested in technology enough to listen to the shows and use it. And they know that there are a number of people in the world who would love to apply for a mortgage or a refi without going to the loan office, without going through stacks of, you know, papers and finding the right forms and all of that stuff. And they've designed Quicken Loans, which is probably the leading mortgage broker in the country, has designed a fabulous product called Rocket Mortgage. The idea is to make it absolutely easy for you to do it all online. Apply for a loan, a home loan, or refi online. Send them your bank statements, your pay stubs with a touch of a button, and you'll get approved in minutes for a custom mortgage solution tailored to your unique financial situation. That's what technology can do for you. I remember the last time I got a loan, home loan, I went to my mortgage broker, and he actually had a big stack of papers that he would thumb through to find the rate. Computers, it's amazing what they've done. This is all online. You know what? You can even do it from your phone. You don't have to get up from the couch. If you're looking to refi, if you're looking to buy a home, check out Rocket Mortgage today. Go to quickenloans.com/techguy. quickenloans.com/techguy. Maybe it's time to get a loan from the 21st century, hey? Equal housing lender licensed in all 50 states. NMLS, consumeraccess.org, number 3030. Rocket Mortgage from Quicken Loans. quickenloans.com/techguy. And, of course, we thank them from the bottom of our hearts for supporting the Tech Guy podcast. Leo Laporte, whoa, the tech guy, 8888, Ask Leo. I have to apologize to Apple because I think I inadvertently slandered them because it's not their fault that the laptop, a MacBook, costs $10,000 in Brazil. As the chat room quite correctly pointed out, Apple would love to sell it at a more reasonable price. Of course, Apple does, you know, and the problem is tariffs in Brazil. Brazil is very protectionist. One of the reasons Apple and Foxconn built a plant to make iPhones in Brazil is to get the price down on iPhones in Brazil. If the product is made in Brazil using Brazilian employees, Brazilian labor, they don't charge those tariffs. Makes sense, I guess. So that's why it's $10,000 for a laptop in Brazil. There is this currency thing that, you know, if you buy an Apple product or product for most tech companies in Canada, where they don't have big tariffs because of NAFTA, you still pay more because of currency fluctuations. This is the excuse they give. I was actually shocked. I bought a paperback book in Toronto when I was up there, and it was like four times more expensive. And the excuse is that, well, we print the price on the book, and when we print it in U.S., and you could see in many paperbacks, it'll say U.S. Canadian, and you'll see the difference. We're not sure what the Canadian dollar is going to be at a year later or 10 years later when you buy the book, so we have to inflate it. Okay. Mm-hmm. Okay. 8888, Ask Leo. You didn't listen to the show for an economics lesson. It shocks me when I hear $10,000 for a laptop in Brazil, a Mac laptop. Wow. But apologies to Apple. It's not their fault. It's tariffs. Jake's on the line from Washington. Hey, Jake, Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hello, Leo. How you doing today?
I'm wonderful. How are you? Fishing, and loving all day.
Yeah, well, if my boat was running, I'd be fishing too.
Well, I guess in some regards, I'm glad your boat's not working because now we can talk.
Yeah. Hey, I got a problem with my computer. I don't know if it got a virus or what. Every time I go to Bing and punch in for Windows 10, it goes back to the desktop. I go back to desktop. If I go to the starting page to see how many salmon's coming over Bonneville, it goes to the desktop.
Oh, you are a serious fisherman. Now, this is the best use of Windows I ever heard. All right.
And I hear the Chinook's running, but I don't know how many's coming over the dam right now because it goes back to the desktop. If I do something on the desktop, like my Yahoo Mail, and punch it in, it goes to the starting page.
Oh, I see. So you're saying I'm trying to get the idea here. You're saying that every time you click a link, it opens your browser, but it doesn't open your browser to where you want it to go. It opens it to just the starting page, your normal starting page of the browser.
Or the desktop.
When you say desktop, what do you mean, desktop?
Well, on Windows 8, you get a starting page, and then you can go up and punch your desktop, and it comes up with your desktop.
Yeah, got it. So it sounds like the browser is disappearing even. Is that right? And so you expect to see the browser, but you're getting the desktop instead.
That's right. But I get in my desktop and punch my Yahoo, it goes to the starting page.
Sounds like...
Windows 8.
Okay, the starting page of Windows 8 in the browser, or do you get like the start menu? You mean that
the
big page?
Menu.
Oh, that big page,
yeah.
The tiles. Golly.
Yeah, the tiles.
Golly.
And if I get into the tiles and punch for fishing report, or see how warm the water is in the Columbia River, it goes back to desktop.
So I get, all right, now I get, because I had to think, I think back to about Windows 8. So I get now what you're talking about. You never get the browser. You either get the big tile page, the start, the horrible tile page, which Microsoft got rid of with Windows 10.
I like that.
Well, you like it. It's good for a tablet for sure, and it makes it easy to have big tiles there.
What I got is an all-in-one Acer computer sitting in front of me.
Yeah.
And that's my desktop.
Yeah. And when it goes to the desktop, you don't no browser launches. You just see your desktop wallpaper.
Yeah, that's right. If I punch in, if I go to tile and punch in the fishing report, it goes to the desktop, and all I see is the wallpaper of everything else on there.
Okay, so it sounds like something's wrong.
I go to Yahoo and bounce it back to starting page, which where all your tiles are.
Yeah, I get what you're. Took me a while to kind of remember what Windows 8 was like, because, boy, that was a nightmare.
Like I just went to Bing to go to Windows 10 to see what Windows 10 looks like or install it. It bounced back to desktop page.
Now, are you still on Windows 8, or have you updated to Windows 8.1?
No. I'm straight Windows 8.
I would. Here's the first thing I would do, and I'm not guaranteeing this would fix it, but it's for security reasons, it's probably a good idea. Run Windows Update and go to 8.1. That's not going to change the big screen or any of that stuff. 10 would. 10 would get rid of your nice tiles page that you like, although you can turn it back on in 10, but you have to turn it on. The other thing, it sounds like, so there's two Windows. One of the things I didn't like about Windows 8 is that there are two versions of Internet Explorer. There's one for the tiles, one, you know, kind of tile style, and they used to call them Metro apps, but they don't want them. Modern apps is what they call them. So there's a modern, that's a terrible name, modern apps version, and there's a desktop version of Internet Explorer. So here's, and since you like the modern look, the big tile look, what I would do is I would make sure you open Internet Explorer from the tiles, okay? And get, so you want the modern version of IE. And then bookmark, then make a tile with your page, your salmon page, from that. And that won't take you out to the desktop.
Well, you know what's funny about that?
What?
I just done that while you're talking to me.
Yeah.
I went to the tile page.
Yep.
I went down, hit Internet Explorer.
Yep.
Blue page come on and go right back to the starting page.
Dang nabbit. So now we know what's wrong. Your Internet Explorer is messed up. So, unfortunately, because of the way Internet Explorer is set up, it's really intimately part of the operating system. You know, it's not like if Microsoft Word were messed up, you could uninstall and reinstall. But uninstalling and reinstalling Internet Explorer is not as easy and is a little bit more complicated. So the first thing you should do, if you can get IE, can you ever get Internet Explorer to run at all?
Yeah, in the desktop.
Okay. I want you to reset it. What's broken is the modern version. But I want you to reset Internet Explorer, because sometimes there's stuff in there, for instance, maybe a toolbar or an extension or something like that. And that could be part of the problem. And so I want you to reset Internet Explorer.
Well, let me ask you a stupid question. How do you do that?
In the menu. So that's why I asked if you could get it running. Because once you get IE running, you look in the menu and you'll see a reset, and you want to do that. Yeah. You also could go in the start menu and run it in safe mode. That might, and just check what we want to do is see if that'll work. But my strongest recommendation, and I think it'll fix this and a lot of other things, you don't have to go to 10. I'm not saying go to 10. 8.1 though. In fact, you weren't even allowed to upgrade from Windows 8.0. They really want you to go to 8.1. That fixes a lot of problems. Windows 8 was a mess. Windows 8.1 fixes a lot of problems, and I think you'll prefer it. Okay? So a couple of things to
I here's what my diagnosis is based on your symptoms.
Yes.
Is that the Internet Explorer desktop is fine, but Internet Explorer, the modern version, is not. That's the version you want, and when you try to run it, it messes up. So we want to fix it, and the first thing I would do is upgrade. Go to your Windows Update and install 8.1. That will replace it with a newer version. That should fix it. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. That's a tough one. There's another possibility. Hang on a sec. There's another possibility, which is that you can get the Internet Explorer from the Windows Store. So open the Windows Store and re-download or update Internet Explorer, the modern version. That's the one that's available in the store.
Well, that's where I'm at right now. I went to a free update for 8.1.
Yeah, I would do that. I would do that. I think that's going to fix everything.
And that's what I'm downloading right now.
Okay, good.
Happened.
Okay, see if that fixes it. That would be my guess.
My buddy, we talk on the phone. He said, go to Windows 10. Well, you know, I need to see what Windows 10 looks like, see if I'm going to like it or not.
Yeah, I don't know if you need to go to Windows 10, but you definitely need to go to Windows 8.1. Because Windows 8 was kind of buggy. So I think that's going to fix a lot of things. And it's going to look just like Windows 8. You're going to be very comfortable.
Oh, well.
Yeah.
Well, somebody said Microsoft quit supporting Windows 8.
They did. That's why that's another reason to go to Windows 8.1. You don't have to give up on Windows 8.1. They still support that. 8.1 fixes a lot of problems. And then, you know, I'll tell you, you can try. It's too late to do the free upgrade. So you know what? Stay with 8.1. Stay with 8.1.
Oh, I get on Bing. There's still some places say free upgrade for Windows 10.
Well, maybe if you still get offered it, you know, one of the things you can do is you can try it, and if you don't like it, you can go back to Windows 8.1. But I think if you like 8.1, if you like 8.0, you'll like 8.1, and I see no reason to change. Stay with 8.1.
Yeah, I like it when you get on. You know, if you want something specific in the tablet, you go over, punch your tablet.
Yeah.
And it comes up for fishing report. Tell you how many fish going up Willamette River and Columbia and all the dams. A snake.
Do you line catch those? How do you catch those salmon?
Yeah, right off the boat, throwing.
How fun. And do you eat them?
Yeah, well, salmon.
That's good.
Yeah.
That's good eating.
Salmon, what I do is I sit here and watch the fishing report. Up, see how many fish are going over the dam, and I see which way they're going, if they're going up higher in the Columbia or they're going up to Snake River. But then I make plans to go over to the Windass or Forks in Idaho.
What's the limit? How many can you catch? How big are they? How big can they be?
Right now, how big?
They're big. They're huge.
Well, they can be 15 to 40 pounds right now.
Holy cow.
The Walker, they're allowing two. Up here above Bonneville, they're allowing three Chinooks.
That's plenty, though, right? That'll last you all year. Do you smoke them? Do you freeze it? What do you do with it?
Oh, hey, we smoke them. We wrap them in tinfoil and freeze them till later.
Yeah.
Fry them, bake them, barbecue them. We just got hacked over here in the fishing department, and this weekend's another free fishing weekend. Cause they hack Idaho, Oregon, and Washington.
Wow. Wow.
And everybody over there don't have a punch card this weekend.
Nice.
And down at Walker, they're letting you keep two.
What are you doing? What are you doing home? Get out there.
My boat's broke down.
Oh, darn it. What a rotten time for the boat to broke down.
Yeah, I lost the water pump in the inboard.
Oh, man. Hey, I got to run because I got to go back. I got to go back on the air, but... Man,
well, I'm trying to install this. It says download, but I ain't doing nothing.
Yeah, try again. You know, it may be there's also a possibility your system has other issues, and that's going to be a bigger problem. That's going to require a reinstall of Windows, I'm sorry to say. But try to get 8.1 on there. See if you can get 8.1 running. I got to run. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, 8888. Ask Leo, the phone number. It's the Hunting, Fishing, and Computing Show. We have a fabulous cultural melange on the show today. I can't wait to see where we're going next. Chris is on the line from Boynton, Florida. Hi, Chris.
Hey, Leo, how are you? Great to talk to you again.
Thanks for calling.
I'm not going fishing. I'm not going fishing today.
Are you going hunting?
No.
Then it must be some loving. It must be loving in your face.
Hey, that sounds good. I'm with you. Thank you. So I got a couple of quickies for you. I need to build an app, and I need to, like, have someone at Upwork, the old Elance, kind of build it for me.
Right.
But I don't know what to call it. What I'm doing is I want to build an app for, you know, the iPhone, the Android, and my website.
Yep.
And it's just like a simple drop-down menu, like, you know, I'm in column A, I have three of these, this will save me this much energy. And it's a very small database that it'll be
sounds pretty simple.
Talking to.
Sounds pretty simple.
Yeah, what would I call it? I don't know what to call it when I'm posting on Upwork.
What's the data? What is the...
It's energy savings.
Energy savings.
So, you know,
so you want to write it? Yeah, you want? I don't know what you call it. The most important thing, if I'm the guy looking at the listings, is the cross-platform aspect. So you want somebody who will be using a cross-platform tool that allows them to write it once and have it run on iOS, Android, and the web. There are such things exist. And there are a lot of great ways to do that. So that's going to be the first thing you're looking for, I think. You don't want a separate, custom, fully from the ground up built app for each platform. You want one app that runs at all three, and totally doable. Right. So you're looking for an expert in one of those cross platforms. And I don't know if there's one better than the other. There are a number of them. There's open source ones. There's the commercial ones. But that's the first thing. You want cross-platform app development. It isn't a complicated app, which is good, because cross-platform usually means that you can't, you know, it's a little more limited. But what you just described for me is pretty simple. And I would mention the database. It pulls data. It's a database app, because they need to know that.
I'm almost running off an Excel spreadsheet. It's that small.
Yeah, what you described to me, I think, is sufficient to put a listing up on Elance. Yeah.
Great.
Hey, the most important thing for the programmer, most important thing for the programmer to know is that you wanted all three platforms.
Excellent. And we'll do that. Thank you so much
for
that. Have you been hearing anyone talk about the iPhone? I'm getting calls in, and somehow the telemarketers have figured out a scam. It rings once, and then goes right to voicemail. As a matter of fact, it happened while I was holding for you for the show.
Yeah, it's happening to me, too. I think that's carrier specific, but I don't know. There's no way that a person calling you can force that, but maybe there is. I've been getting that too, where you don't get a call, you get voicemail. And
I
it's
can see because I'm at my desk and it had one ring and then one right to voicemail.
Yeah, you can see it happening.
Really weird. Yeah.
I don't.
You scan telemarketing.
And you have one phone number to that phone, and that's it. It's like a normal setup,
correct.
Right? Who's your carrier?
Yeah, T-Mobile.
Okay, I'm on T-Mobile too. Maybe this is some way that either they I don't know. This is a good question. Somebody listening has a solution for this, because I've been seeing this a lot lately. Voicemails with no ring.
Their caller ID. You can see it's not a legit phone number. And then all they're doing is trying to say, you know, hey, your student loans are you know, in the rear, call me right away.
Yeah, I get a lot of your car insurance is lapsing and stuff like that. It's bogus. Now, somebody in the chat room, Lou MM, says he's as AT&T, he's getting them too. Lou, you're not on an iPhone, are you? I wonder what the common base of this is. It just seems like it would be more like a carrier thing than an iPhone thing. Oh, Lou isn't on an iPhone. Maybe. But see, I'm getting it on an Android phone, so I don't know. Telemarketers are the bane of our existence, aren't they? I don't know what the answer is. And this is a new twist where they know you're not going to talk to them, so they can leave. Basically, they're putting spam on your phone.
Exactly. And then you've got to, you know.
You hear the voicemail, you go, oh, man, what a waste. Yeah. I get a lot of that. The best thing to do from now on, I unlist my cell phone number. I put it on the Do Not Track registry. And then I use Google Voice. Sure. I use a Google Voice number everywhere. And Google Voice gives you a little more control, as would any commercial service like that, like eVoice, gives you more control over screening the call before it even arrives. That's the best way for me to handle robocalls, telemarketing calls. Maybe that's why they're doing this, because it gets around that stuff. They go direct to voicemail. That's annoying. Anybody know? There's a rep from the carriers on the listening to the phone, making sure that I don't say anything bad about them. If you're listening, here's a way to get on our good side. Tell us what to do. I'll keep listening.
Thank you, Leo.
Sure, anytime. Thanks, Chris. Take care. All right, Stephanie, San Bernardino. Hi, Stephanie.
Hello. Oh, I'm sorry. I was trying to...
That's all right. Computer. I appreciate you hanging on. What can I do for you?
Thank you so much. I downloaded Windows 10, okay. And ever since I did that, I can't get on the internet. So I deleted it, but I still can't get on the internet.
Oh, Lord.
I know. Please, I've been going nuts.
Oh, Lord. Okay, yes. So little PSA here. This is why I often tell people don't get a Windows machine or even a Mac because it's more complicated than you need. Really, all you want to do is get email, surf the internet, stay in touch with family and friends. Yes. There are simpler computers out there like a Chromebook that would do all that without any of these hassles. Literally, zero.
I have the Packard notebook.
Right, yeah. But you got one and we got to help you.
Yes.
Why is it not getting the internet? So when you open the browser and it says, I don't have a connection?
Yes, I think it's maybe my computer's dying. But so it says no network access and connection options, and then is not set up to use my mom's wireless. And then it doesn't. It says it's going to connect, but it doesn't. And then it gave my mom's name on her connection, and then it disappeared.
I'm sorry to say, I don't know how to fix this from remote control. I mean, the only way I know would fix it is reinstalling a fresh copy of whatever Windows we're using, Windows 7?
Yes.
Yeah, is just start the Windows 7 all over again. I mean, if I were there, first thing I would do is I would look at your wireless settings. You know, down there in the right-hand corner of the system tray, you've got the little wireless thing. Yes. Open that up, and you're trying to join the Wi-Fi, and nothing happens?
Right, and then one time, it would even pull up that. You know what I mean? When it gives you options, it wouldn't even do that.
Yeah, something's messed. Here's the technical term. Something's messed up. But I can't. It's impossible for me at a distance to figure out what's messed up. And golly, I wish I could say, oh, well, you go down to these guys and they'll fix it. But there is no these guys. And none I would trust. So, I mean, if you have a trusted computer guy, that's somebody needs to do that. It's no user serviceable parts. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Please, from now on, don't buy Windows PCs. Stop the insanity. Right? You see, I mean, people get mad at me when I say buy a Chromebook or buy an iPad. But don't buy Windows. Please. Yeah, exactly, Lou. Exactly. Most, unless you want to be, and I want to be, and a lot of the people listening to the show want to be, computer enthusiasts. And we love fixing computers and doing all that stuff. You shouldn't buy a general purpose PC, because that's you're going to spend most of your time fixing it. Well, hey, how are you today? Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Time to talk about computers and the internet and home theater and why you should never, ever, ever buy Windows or Mac. 8888 Ask Leo. Actually, some of you should. If you're a gamer, for instance, you should have a Windows PC, the PC gaming, you know. If you run an office and you use QuickBooks, probably should have a PC, right? Although I guess they've opened QuickBooks Online to Macs now. But there are reasons to have a PC. Generally, I would say having a Windows computer, Macs are designed more for home users, but they have complexities of their own. The problem really is general purpose computers. I feel so bad for Christine, our last caller, because she has an HP laptop, and it's, you know, the networking's not working. Now, Windows really goes back to a heritage where it expects you to be working in an office with an IT professional on call. Who would, you know who I'm talking about. It's the guy, he's got a lot of keys. We always knew when the IT guy was coming down the hall because you hear clank, clank, clank. These are the chains I forged in life. The poor guy. I mean, here he comes. You hear him? He's the guy with all the keys. And he may even have a bunch of, thumb drives these days in his pockets. Used to be when I was, yeah, he does. Yeah, John's pulling out his thumb drives just to prove it. Oh my gosh, how many do you have, John? 4, 5? No, just a few. All right. In the old days, in fact, when we moved, I think I got rid of it. I used to have remember the CD binders? You could have hundreds of CDs in. I had, when I was, would go around to fix computers, I had a CD binder with a bunch of boot disks and diagnostics disks and all of that stuff. Windows is really kind of designed around that kind of environment. And, of course, a lot of home users use it. But the problem is, what do you do when something goes wrong? You have two choices. You either become a computer enthusiast. A lot of people listen to the show. One of the reasons they listen to the show is they want to be an expert. They want to be an enthusiast. They want to be able to fix this stuff. But most people, and I'm increasingly in this camp, so I have some sympathy for this, just want it to work, please. I don't want today. Can I please? Do a little prayer when you sit down at your computer and turn it on for the first time in a while? A little prayer, please. Please just work. Please just work. Please. I do. I have a little prayer. Please let this computer work. I'll be good. I don't. Please don't. Don't crash. Oh, it crashed. because you know that it's going to be hours of your time. If you know what to do. The problem is, if you don't know what to do, minutes of your time can make it worse. You could easily do something that means, oh, now you're really out of luck. And you probably have that experience, too. You've done something, and you bring it into you find a guy. There are computer repair people out there. They're the equivalent of the shade tree mechanic. They're an endangered species. You find a guy, and he looks at it and says, what did you do? And you say, well, I tried to reinstall this Windows, but it's... Oh, next time just bring it to me first, okay? Oh, you made it worse. And I think we're learning now this is not the solution. You call the company. And boy, that's not a good experience. Unless you pay for gold service. And there's a reason. It's kind of our fault because we wanted cheap computers. And when you get a computer down to $400 or $500, you have to cut corners somewhere. And the most expensive thing companies like Dell used to offer was the support, the free support. That's expensive. One call is $20 or $30. When your margin on a computer is $20 or $30, what are you going to do? You can't take, you can't help people. Your profit goes away. It just goes away. So in order to get computers down to that price, they had to outsource tech support. They had to create a tech support team that wasn't knowledgeable. Those guys are expensive. People who can answer the phone and help you solve this problem, they're expensive. And those calls go for hours, which means they're even more expensive. No, they hired some guy to read a script. And they give him a big fat notebook. And he opens the notebook and it says, ask if this is happening. If it is, go to page 32. By the way, you can do that yourself. You don't need to get on a call to India and be on hold for hours. You don't need to. Microsoft has a wonderful knowledge base, support.microsoft.com. Those are the scripts, basically. Is this happening? Is this happening? That's the same script. The problem is the script has no insight, no intuition, and the guy who's reading the script has no insight or intuition, so you're really not going to get very far with that. It almost always, the script ends at page 443, reinstall Windows. And for me, mostly when I talk to people like Christine, there's not much I can do. I don't want to spend the whole show talking through a problem. I can't. I can't fire up remote access software and get on our system, which is another possible way to do this. Although that's dangerous unless you really trust the person. Don't do it. Somebody cold calls you and says, I see you're having trouble with Windows. can I get in your system to fix it? You may go, oh, thank you. How did you know? Thank you. Don't. That is not what you think it is. It is not the angel coming from on high to fix your computer. It is just a bad guy who, in between answering phone calls with a notebook, he's got a little downtime. So they give him phone numbers to call at random. He's the same guy often, by the way. And he says, ah, I see you have a problem with your computer. And you know what? That works. A lot of people go, yeah, yeah. How'd you know? Well, I'm at Microsoft now. I'm here up at the company headquarters in Bangalore. And I could see because the telemetry is telling us you're having problems. Here, I'll tell you what. Do this. And they get you to launch the event viewer. You're going to click command, you know, hit the Windows key and R, type EVT. Well, I don't even remember what the, but type EVT viewer. Oh, what's that? Oh, this is going to tell us. This is going to tell us. Oh, look at that. My goodness. Do you see any red X's or worse, yellow exclamation marks? Yes. Oh, dear. Oh, dear. We got a problem here. Oh, my goodness. Well, I'll tell you what. Now, there's two ways to go here. They either say, give me your credit card. And for $300, I'll fix it. In a way, that's worse because now the guy's got your credit card. He's got $300, and he's still going to put malware on your system because as soon as you give him remote access, he's in. He's in. Hey, what can I do today? Let's see. He's got complete control of your computer. So you may be tempted. You may say, oh, Angel of Mercy, thank you. My prayers were heard. Thank you for calling. Yes. No, don't. That's bad. That makes it worse. And unfortunately, there isn't like the, I wish there was the, you know, the, some sort of certification system. The Corps of Computer Engineers. Every town has a place to go where a guy can fix your computer. He's wearing a, you know, crisp white uniform, a little Sunoco hat. Change your oil, check your tires, fix your PC. I'll do it all for you. No, that doesn't exist either. And, you know, I hate to tell you, but and I'm not going to name names, but there's some companies, there's some computer stores out there that have squads of people, you know, with cute little cars with signs on them and stuff. Those aren't, no, that's a real hit and miss proposition because somebody who really knows what to do is way more expensive than they want to pay. So these are people who had a couple of days training and they go out in the field. And, you know, if you're lucky, you got somebody who's been doing this long enough, he's got some experience under his belt. Maybe he had some, you know, he was good at it anyway. So really, get a Chromebook. Okay, please. It does everything, unless you're a PC gamer, or you're going to do QuickBooks online. Even if you're going to do QuickBooks, get a Chromebook. Or a tablet, get an iPad. That's fine, too. You just don't see the same problems. You don't need that guy. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hey, let me mention real quickly BlueApron.com, our fine sponsor. Blue Apron is, I like their mission statement. Their goal, and it's right here on the piece of paper I'm looking at, is to make incredible home cooking accessible to everyone while supporting a more sustainable food system, setting the highest standard for ingredients, and here's the most important one, and building a community of home chefs. You know what? It's wonderful. I should sell you first on the joy of cooking, right? But it's also a pain. I want to do it, but at the end of the day, it's been a long day. The last thing I want to do is think about what I'm going to make, go to the store, buy the ingredients, get them home, cook them. Who has time? So what ends up happening? We go to IHOP or we get Kentucky Fried Chicken, neither of which, as delicious as that might be, is good for you. But you go into your home. You arrive, there's the Blue Apron box. Lovely Blue Apron box. I love it when it's there, refrigerated, full of the best ingredients, and the recipe card, and everything you need to make an amazing meal. The house smells wonderful. 40 minutes later, you're eating. It was easy. You get this great confidence from it that, oh, I could do that. I can cook this. They have plans for couples, but they also have family plans with kid-friendly ingredients. And they set the highest quality of standards. They have 150 local farms, fisheries, and ranchers that supply their products, their foods. It's not products. These are whole foods, right? The seafood is sourced sustainably. The beef is raised humanely. Chickens, free range. Pork, raised naturally. They use regenerative farming practices on all their farms. This is the way you want to do it. And because you get exactly the right ingredients to make the meal, there's no waste. If you need three asparagus spears, you get it. One clove of garlic, you get it. One lemon, you get it. No more, no less. Blue Apron, it supports healthy and happy families too, because research shows Blue Apron families cook together nearly three times more often. Teach your kids not to go out and eat fast food. Teach them to cook, enjoy, to have a wonderful meal that you all sit down together and love. I always think of it as making a meal is kind of a way of sharing love with your family. And by the way, look at what's on the menu. Oh, that looks good. Porchetta style sandwiches with baby kale pesto and marinated cucumber salad. But you know what? Oh, wait a minute. Chicken and fresh basil fettuccine with creamy tomato sauce. Oh, my mom would love that. Great stuff. Look, three meals free. Pick your three at blueapron.com/twit. blueapron.com/twit. I think you're going to like it. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. 8888-ASK-LEO, the phone number. John in Hartford, Connecticut. Hi, John.
Hey, Leo, how you doing?
I'm well. How are you?
Very good. So I wanted to call in and kind of help you answer the question in regards to the telemarketers going straight to voicemail.
Yeah. How do they do that?
Basically what they're doing is it's an application that, you know, essentially bypasses with one ring, goes straight into your voicemail. And the most surprising thing, it's actually available as a consumer app called Sly Dial.
Sly Dial. So it's sending some tones, I guess, that tell the switch, just go straight to voicemail.
Correct. And you can download it on the App Store, you know, Apple, Android, for yourself, a consumer. You know, dial any number you would like and go straight into that person's voicemail.
Sly Dial, direct-to-voicemail messaging. Wow. Actually, I kind of like this. It might be, I could see some uses. It says, for instance, every time it's your birthday, right, your family calls to sing happy birthday. They don't really want to talk to you and sing. They want to leave it on your voicemail. So this would let them go right through to that. But I would hate for
that. Exactly.
Yeah. So, and then if you get Sly Dial Premium, it'll skip the ads and get connected more quickly. Wow.
Correct.
Wow. Have you used this or you just happen to know about it?
I have. I'm actually in sales. There are certain situations where I don't necessarily want to talk to the person or just need to leave them a message and avoid them, and it works quite well.
Interesting. Very, especially if it's a collection call, right? That was what I would use it for, but I guess collections are better in person. Interesting. So the people in sales know about this. I am so glad you called. You resolved a mystery, John. Thank you.
You're very welcome.
I appreciate it. Sly Dial. Now everybody's going to be using that, so get ready. You're going to have even more Sly Dials. This is something, of course, the carriers could eliminate, I presume, by changing the way their system works by ignoring those tones. But, you know, there may be a reason to have those tones. By the way, there's a new group messaging feature. I'm looking at the Sly Dial webpage. Allows you to do this to 10 people at once. Oh, now we're talking. That's spam. That's spam. If you're group dialing 10 people at a time and leaving a message on their voicemail, that's voicemail spam. Man. Well, now you know how that happens. Now you know. Sly Dial. And I figure if there's one, there's got to be a lot of them because this must be a documented feature of the system. Press, 674, you go right. I bet you there's a thing, *674 or whatever. Go right to voicemail. Don't even ring. Just go right to voicemail. Thank you, John. We now know the answer. Oy, oy, oy. Neil in Phoenix, Arizona. Hi, Neil.
Hey, Leo. Thanks for taking my call.
Thanks for calling.
To you. My pleasure. I'm just kind of following up with you. You talked to me a few weeks ago about switching carriers. Maybe you remember, and I was trying to decide whether to go from Verizon to somewhere else.
Yeah.
And I'm actually following, but I decided to go with T-Mobile, taking your advice.
Good.
I actually went down to my T-Mobile store yesterday and was ready to sign up until I realized that I have an iPhone 6S Plus. And you know, while they're willing to buy it out and I can get a T-Mobile version of the phone, I was thinking if I'm going to do that, I'd rather simply buy an iPhone 7 if I'm going to do that. But then I watched several of your other shows, Mac Break Weekly, you know, the Mac-related shows and screensavers and such. The point being is I know that you have your favorite phone really is the Note 7.
Well, now I should be clear. My favorite phone changes pretty regularly. It's the phone of the hour, for sure. But, you know, there's new phones all the time. And you know, unfortunately, my job is to try them all. And what I do is I buy them all. And then I continue with the one that I, for this moment, want to use. There's a disadvantage to that, by the way, which the folks at XDA Developers, the great forum for Android users, talk about, is that reviewers often don't use Samsung phones long enough to experience the actual problems that occur. And I have to acknowledge this, that at least in the past, I don't know about the Note 7, it didn't happen with the S7, but with the S6 it did. After a few months, these phones get janky. They slow down, they get hesitant. And it's something to do with the Samsung software on there, I don't know, but I should acknowledge that. Most reviewers will never see that because nobody, including myself, uses a phone for 3 months. We're always on to the next thing. So take what I say with a grain of salt. What did you end up doing?
Well, I haven't done anything yet because I was down there literally yesterday.
You did try them anyway.
I didn't want to. Well, the iPhone 7, of course, isn't there. The Note 7 is kind of tied down. It's kind of hard to.
Oh, it makes me mad they do that. Yeah.
But I saw it. It's a beautiful device.
Oh yeah.
But my point is, I feel like I'm kind of, and this kind of goes to your other show the other day, which is talking about kind of a product lock in, and I kind of feel locked in because I also have an Apple Watch that goes with it.
Yeah.
If I did go to the Samsung, yeah, now, a $700 device that I can do nothing
right
with.
Tell me again which iPhone you have right now.
6S Plus.
Okay, so you have the latest iPhone. Are you unhappy with it? Is there a reason you want a new phone? Or you just want a new carrier?
No, well, I wanted a new carrier, and I didn't have to get a new phone. In fact,
no, you don't. You can get a T-Mobile SIM and put it in a Verizon 6S Plus. It works just fine. I've done it.
So there's no reason you're saying I should consider perhaps hanging on to this device.
Keep your phone.
Instead of the i7?
Keep your phone. Yeah, we don't know what the iPhone 7 is going to bring. There's a real debate going on, and the debate is really kind of premature since Apple hasn't announced anything about this loss of the headphone jack. I would not want a phone that didn't have a headphone jack. I use mine all the time. And I don't think having another dongle to carry around is a good solution either, or having to buy special Apple-branded headphones. So that would be an argument to keep your iPhone 6S Plus. That's not even a year old now. I'd stick with the 6S Plus. You can go to T-Mobile, say, I want to be a customer, give me a SIM, and you put it in that Verizon phone, and it will work just fine.
That's true, and that's a good savings. You had a point. Okay.
At least that defers the decision. The reason that works, by the way, the FCC compels Verizon not to carrier lock the SIM card. This was a consent decree that Verizon made after being accused of various nefarious deeds by the FCC. So they don't lock the SIM card on the iPhone 6S Plus. So it's, in effect, an unlocked phone, even though you got it carrier locked and it even says Verizon all over it. It is usable on any carrier. You just put a new SIM in.
Okay. Well,
that's by the way, only Verizon. AT&T doesn't work that way. Only Verizon because of this FCC consent decree. So I try that, and that at least buys you some time. It also gives you a chance to see how you like T-Mobile. Yeah, other carriers do not do this. This is only because Verizon had to. They don't want to do that. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. You need to dial into the provider's voicemail system, send some DTMF codes to get to the prompt to record a message for the desired mailbox number, then send a string of DTMF codes to get it to the right mailbox, and that's the 10-digit phone number. So the way this works is they don't even call your phone. They call the voicemail system, and then they say, send this to this number. So now we talked to John in Hartford about how you can use an app to get right to voicemail without ringing somebody's phone. And leave them a voicemail message. So I thought, yeah, there's got to be a direct way to do this without an app. It turns out the trick is not to call the person you're calling. That'll ring their phone. But to call the voicemail box of a particular carrier. You call, there's a number, I guess, for voicemail for all the carriers. You leave a message using a series of tones to leave a message. And then you direct it to a phone number. You will actually enter the phone number and say, put this message in his box. You know what? This has been around for ages. I remember this now. You go into your voicemail and you can forward, right? Because you can forward a voicemail to somebody. You just forward it to their number. It has to be on the same carrier and you just forward it to their number. So that is essentially, I would guess, what slime, whatever it is, mail is doing. But let's not do this because it's voicemail spam. And probably shouldn't even mention this on the air. It's an interesting conundrum, isn't it? I have this problem a lot. I mean, in general, I think media and press have this problem. And I don't know what to do about it. You tell me. If you learn about something like this, 'twould be best not to speak of it. We don't want to tell the bad guys how. Except the truth is, in most cases, this information probably is passed around, and all the people, you know, all the spammers already know about it. What I feel like we're doing is we're informing normal humans. Now, maybe there's going to be some small number of people who want to spam who didn't know this, and we're empowering them. It's the same issue when you talk about security vulnerabilities. Do you talk about them? The general rule in the security community, not always adhered to, is if you find, let's say I found a security flaw in Windows, first thing you would do is you'd notify Microsoft. And you'd go to the right person and you say, there's a bug, here's the bug, here's how it happens, here's what's going on. And give them typically 90 days to 6 months to fix it. Now, there's a catch. If the company does not fix it, then you're put in a little bit of an ethical dilemma because you found it. There's nothing to stop other people from finding it, including bad guys. The company has decided not to fix it. So now, do you publicize it? Doing two things. By publicizing it, you let normal people know there's a flaw and maybe even put pressure on the company to fix it. This happens all the time, by the way. But you're also telling the bad guys how to do it. It's a real conundrum. It happens in the security world all the time, but it happens in other areas as well. You know, a big one is trolling. There's a lot of trolling, particularly on Twitter, and it's terrible. I remember Leslie Jones, the actress in the new Ghostbusters movie, was just horrifically trolled. And there's two schools of thought when this kind of stuff happens. One is ignore it. In fact, that's the general school of thought. Don't feed the troll. Don't feed the troll. Don't feed the troll. That's the drumbeat, because people who do this kind of thing, put these horrific messages on Twitter, and Twitter is just a bastion for this stuff, want attention. They don't care if it's negative attention. They want attention. They want to be, they want the world to know. So the best thing you can do, it's widely believed, is just ignore it. But if you ignore it, then it just keeps on going. So to her credit and her braveness, she started retweeting the horrific tweets. Now, as a result, everybody knew about it, not just her. She was seeing them, and now everybody saw them and was horrified. Twitter kind of kicked one guy off. Problem is, all the trolls are anonymous. You can't really get rid of them. You can suspend an account, but they just come back. She left Twitter, has come back, but is being trolled again. And so it fixed nothing. So it's hard to know. Do you go public with stuff? Do you tell the world and thereby empowering bad guys? Or is it better just to pursue something that's sometimes called security through obscurity? Not even mention it. It's a bad idea to mention that way you could leave voicemail spam. I think it's out there. If you Google it, you can find it. So I think it's probably good for us to know why it's happening. And then the conversation can lead to what can we do to stop it and maybe go to our carriers and say, please turn this feature off. They're not going to want to because it's a feature, even if it's misused. Maybe you have to go to lawmakers and say, make a law against it. I don't know. Bernie in San Dimas, California is next. Hi, Bernie. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Good afternoon, Leo.
Good afternoon.
Long-time caller.
It's good to talk to you. Welcome.
I've got a simple problem. I've got an old PC that I'm resurrecting temporarily, and I've put XP on it. I've got all the service packs loaded, and it's working perfectly. But I want to know, how do I get all the various updates that Microsoft put on my other PC over time to go onto this PC?
Well, you can get the service pack. I think you can get the service pack 2 on XP. The problem is XP.
I've got all the service packs are installed.
Oh, okay.
I want all those updates to the service packs that came afterwards.
Well, you can get right up to April of 2015. But then after April 2015, Microsoft said, hey, that's it. By the way, we're done with Windows XP. No more patches. And so one of the reasons we've started saying stop using XP is because of the threat, not so much the reality, but the threat that there'll be a bad flaw in XP discovered. People will take advantage of it, and Microsoft will just go, never mind. Can't do anything about it because it's out of end of life. So you're always at risk with Windows XP of that. Now, interestingly, that hasn't happened. It's been more than a year, and there has been no significant flaw in Windows XP that I know of, no big attacks on Windows XP. So you can get all the updates. If you just run Windows XP Update, it should get all the updates, but that's it. You won't get any new ones because there aren't any new ones. There is one workaround, which is kind of interesting. You may or may not want to do this. Turns out Windows XP is widely used in what we call embedded systems, like ATM machines. It's not run on a regular computer, but it's running, in effect, a computer, an embedded computer. And those systems don't get updated. They can't go to Windows 8 or 9 or 10 or whatever. They're stuck on XP. So Microsoft continues to offer patches, believe it or not, for Windows XP for those kind of embedded systems. And if you change a registry key in your existing Windows XP system, you can pretend that you're one of those. You're an embedded version of Windows XP. And you will continue to get updates for Windows XP until 2019. Now, I really thought that Microsoft would cut this off, but they can't. You know what? They can't. Because they, you know, these ATMs and other things, gas station pumps and whatever, they have to keep working. Cash registers, things like that. So if you, it's a simple hack. You've got to do it in your registry. I'll put a link in the show notes at Tech Guy Labs to the information you need. You're basically telling your machine you're not Windows XP home. Your Windows XP embedded, and updates will continue to flow. We'll put it at techguylabs.com. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. They haven't turned this off. I guess they can't, or it's such a small number of people. It was April 27, 2014, wasn't it? It was 2 years ago. And apparently it would continue until 2019. So here is Larry Seltzer's article for you, James. And I really thought this would stop working. Microsoft does not guarantee this. It's for Windows embedded POS ready, which is a point of sale system. And it will continue to receive updates till April 9th, 2019. Now, here's Microsoft's response.
We recently became aware of a hack that purportedly aims to provide security updates to Windows XP customers. The security updates that could be installed are intended for Windows Embedded and Windows Server 2003 customers and do not fully protect Windows XP customers. Windows XP customers also run a significant risk of functionality issues with their machine if they install these updates, as they are not tested against Windows XP. The best way for Windows XP customers to protect their systems is, take a wild guess, to buy Windows 7, 8.1, or 10. Well, yeah. And that would be my advice. But I understand sometimes people don't want to update. So there's the article. By the way, here's his link to see if it still works. And it does. Well, he says, no, it's not a good idea. You're not protected. I think it still works and it's still working. And if you want, Londog gave us a link for the Service Pack 4 for XP, the unofficial one. If you want, we could put that link in there, though. Windows 10 was not free for XP users, ironically. So they had to buy Windows 7 or 8. Yeah, this is a rerun. We're still in the old studio. Or we decided not to move. Or, through the magic of television. Well, if you buy Windows 8, you can then freely upgrade it to Windows 8.1, and then you'll get the Windows 10 upgrade. Although I don't think it's free anymore. Although apparently it is. Leo Laporte, a tech guy, 8888. Ask Leo. Fran, Irvine, California's next. Oh, it's you, Fran. You're on. Hi, Fran.
Hi, Leo. Love talking to you. Love listening to you. I should say love talking to you.
Thank you. And thanks for your patience. I know you're on hold for ages and ages, so I appreciate it.
Thank you so much. Okay, I've listened to you every week, and I know so much about computers, but absolutely nothing about TVs. And it's not that I don't listen to Scott, but I just never really wanted a TV that much. I watch TV a little bit, but and I have a 30-year-old television. Or 20-year-old
what?
It's like a collector.
Nice. What kind? What brand is it?
Well, this is actually a Panasonic. In the other room, I don't know.
Wow. All right.
But it's old, and I'm thinking it's time to get with it into the 21st century.
One thing you'll notice immediately, besides the improvement in quality, the old TVs were tubes, and so they had to have a big, long thing coming out of the back of the screen that made them massive. And modern TVs are just flat panels. They have nothing coming out the back. And so and that's why people get bigger TVs now, because the screen's bigger, but the actual thinness, the thickness of the screen is almost nothing. My newest television, I got an LG OLED screen. It almost disappears. It's literally just a few millimeters thick.
I know. I've seen them, and I think I'll buy one. And I'm hoping you can give me some recommendations.
Sure.
I just want a small one, a 32-inch. And I read online that there's different, I don't know, LED, LCD,
yeah.
OLED.
So first let me ask you, it sounds like you, do you have cable? What do you watch?
I have cable.
Okay. So the first thing you're going to want to do is upgrade your cable subscription to HD. So you probably didn't bother doing that because your old TV didn't do high def.
Mm-hmm.
The good news is you can buy an HD TV that's small. Nobody wants small HD TVs. So the small ones are cheap. I mean cheap compared to the big ones. The TV I bought was very expensive, and that was a few thousand dollars. But a 32-inch, or I would get as big as you think you can tolerate. I know you don't have a big screen in your house. But remember, it's only big in the screen. There's no depth, so you put it right against the wall. But I would get it as big as you can tolerate.
Okay.
Generally, 42 is the starting point.
Okay.
32 is
can
really small.
Can you recommend anything? Can you recommend? Sure. What do I look for? What's HDR? Sure. Is that important?
No. Well, not probably. Not for you.
Okay.
If you then you're going to get a much bigger TV, and it's going to be much more expensive because you're going to have to get a 4K UHD HDR TV. Now we're talking a minimum, I think, a couple of $1,000 and 55 inches. So 42 inches, though, I would get a Vizio. V-I-Z-I-O. You can go to the big box stores, to a Sam's Club or a Price Club or a Costco and get one. You can even see it in action there, and it'll be a few hundred dollars. It'll be $500 or under.
Vizio, that size. Is that the M series?
Pardon me?
Is that the M series? Or?
They have a value series, which I think is the E series. There's three. Yeah, you can. It's just by price. And spend as much as you're comfortable with. You don't need the P series, which is the really expensive, and they don't even make a small one in that series. But yeah, M is good. And what those are LED backlit LCDs for grins. I mean, there's no reason that you need to know that. But what that means is all of these TVs are LED or LCDs. They're light liquid crystal, just like your computer screen. They're liquid crystal displays. What that is that a liquid crystal is kind of cool, is a kind of crystal that when electricity is applied to it, it acts as a shutter. And so they have many of these, and they open and close on command. And then behind them, they'll have some sort of backlight that will allow them to put color on the screen. So the backlight is where the LED comes in. The old LCDs were backlit with fluorescent tubes. In fact, many older computers, same thing. All the newer LCDs are backlit because it has to have some light shining through that shutter by LEDs. And that all changed when we could make LEDs in a consistent white color. As soon as that happened, magic happened. LED backlight is better. There's different kinds of LED backlighting. This is for your own information because I wouldn't worry about it. One is edge lit, which it doesn't go all the way through the screen. And they have full backlit screens. Those are getting fewer and fewer because it's expensive. And really, we can do a pretty good job now with edge lit LED. So that's the backlight that shines through the shutter. LED backlit LED LCDs are really kind of almost all of the market. You're not going to find much different. All the panels are pretty good now. They're all made by a handful of companies. It's really the software and the features that distinguish one TV from another. You don't need a lot of software and features because you're moving from a 30-year-old technology. Anything to you is going to seem like the future.
Right.
I wouldn't go too crazy on any of that stuff. You probably won't use it. That's why I don't even think you need HDR. But get it. But Vizio is what's nice about Vizio is they are low cost, high value. So I think it's a good first TV. Now, if you said
reception, I'm sorry.
Yeah, reception, yes. So you have a cable box?
Yes, but if I hang it on the wall, is there any reception problems? I was reading online somewhere that if I have a remote and I have a cable box behind it, that sometimes
because the cable box is done by light. So you can't block the light port on the cable box. It's infrared, so you can't see it, but it's light. So you need to have the cable box somewhere where it can see the remote control. In other words, not behind the TV.
So, oh, okay. Yeah. I'm glad to hear. I didn't
so
know
you know what almost that. Everybody does is you – there's one more thing I'll tell you about that is not good news. But everybody just gets like a little dresser or a side table or something and puts it on there. And then it's good if it has shelves because then you can put the cable box in the shelf below the TV. The reason you might want that, and this is the bad news, is most modern TVs have terrible sound. That 30-year-old Panasonic didn't expect you to listen on anything but the speaker on the Panasonic. And you know what? It didn't matter because 30 years ago, there wasn't even stereo audio. Well, now most broadcasts are in Dolby HD 5.1 surround sound. So they give you speakers. They're okay. In fact, they won't be much worse. In fact, they'll probably be better than the speakers you've been used to. At least they'll be stereo. But most people end up saying, I got to get some external speakers. And now you get complicated because you got to get an AV receiver Or some people get something called a home theater in a box. This is what I'd recommend for you, which is a DVD player, Blu-ray DVD player, because now you have to get better DVDs. Everything's upgraded. Everything has to be HD now. Mm-hmm. So you need a Blu-ray player. That powers a surround sound speaker system. So it's a kind of convenient one-box solution. Your TV plugs into that. Your cable box plugs into the TV, or most often plugs into the Blu-ray player. And then you have a subwoofer, a center speaker, left and right channels, and often surround left and right channels kind of at your ear distance from the TV. Mm-hmm. That gives you a better sound. You don't need to do that right off the bat.
Mm-hmm.
But just consider that at some point you may say, gosh, you know, I were hearing the full sound on this.
Okay.
It does sound better if you do this. And a home theater in the boxes systems are, don't get a sound bar. Get a home theater in the box. I'm not crazy about sound bars. Home theater in the box set you back just a few $100.
Okay. So then my old DVD and my old VCR, which is really old, obviously.
They'll still work, but because you've got this nice TV, suddenly you'll realize how low quality they are.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
DVD will look fine, by the way. It's the VCR that won't.
Mm-hmm.
But they will still work. Absolutely, they'll still work. The other issue is now this new TV is going to have really an HDMI port. And so you want HDMI from your cable box. And that's why you're going to have to go to your cable company, say, I'm upgrading to HD, and they'll give you a new HD cable box. You'll be spending a few bucks more a month. But you do want that because you don't want to play standard definition, if you can avoid it, on your – people watch I Love Lucy on big screen TVs. They go, boy, this looked terrible. But that's because on the 30-year-old TV, it was kind of smearing it. It looked fine. But now you're seeing every detail. Ugh.
So I tell my cable company that I'm upgrading to
I want HD.
Yeah. HD.
You'll know what to do. And then I think the Vizio is a perfect first HD TV. And 42 inches will not be expensive.
Thank you. I really appreciate your time and your help so much.
Have fun. I think you're going to enjoy it. It really upgrades the experience. And we are in a golden age of television, believe it or not. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. No, her VCR will have composite out, red, white, and yellow. And she'll have to figure out, sometimes those home theater boxes have that kind of an input. And many TVs, I don't know. The VCR is going to be a challenge. You're going to have to get a converter for that. I don't know. Are you still there? No, she. Well, hey, how are you today? Leo Laporte here, the tech guy. Time to talk computers, the internet, home theater, digital photography, smartphones, smart watches, and all that jazz. 8888 Ask Leo. That's the phone number. 888-827-5536. That's toll free from anywhere in the U.S. or Canada. Outside that area, use Skype. Our website, techguylabs.com. That's great to remember because everything I talk about is there. Links, everything. We've got really great show notes. Thanks to James DeRuvo. Hi, James, writing this all down. And then Josh Windisch, who polishes it up, adds audio and video. And of course, your comments. That's a big part of it. And it's all free. There's no sign up. TechGuyLabs.com. Tim, Denver, Colorado. You're next. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, Tim.
Hey, how you doing, Leo?
Very well. How are you?
Doing well. Just wanted to ask you about your thoughts on the Channel Master.
Yeah, I hear a lot of good. I don't have one. I've not used one. It's for over-the-air broadcasts. It's essentially a DVR for over-the-air. Has a lot of nice features, ability to kind of send signals throughout the house, watch it streaming. And it's for OTA. So I don't have an OTA signal in my neck of the woods. We're too far from the big city. So I have to have cable if I want to watch, live locals. Have you used the Channel Master?
I'm actually watching you right now on the Channel Master. They have internet capabilities and... you're one of the channels
nice.
On the internet.
Thank you, Channel Master. I like you even more. That's nice.
Know.
That's nice. Yeah, I think this is a good idea. I mean, it's like a TiVo. And I guess you can use TiVo for the, over the air, but ChannelMaster is kind of an all, you know, they have antennas, they have all the stuff you need to, and if you can get a good, you're in a big city, if you can get a good over the air signal, that is always the best way to watch HDTV. It's less compressed than satellite or cable. You know, it's fewer channels, it's just whatever is over the air, but that's, you know, that's football, that's the Academy Awards, that's, you know, the election, it's all the stuff you need, right?
Yes, sir.
So, and do you, now one of the things I don't like about TiVo is I have to pay a fee for the channel guide. Is there a fee for the channel guide on ChannelMaster?
There is not. It's it basically you have to hook it up to the internet as well. But I get the guide without paying anything.
See, that really bugs me about TiVo. That means they're basically gouging me, and it's not an insignificant amount of money every month, so I have a channel guide, which they apparently don't have to pay for.
Right.
That bugs me. Anyway, this is a good solution for cord cutters. But again, I would underscore, you've got to be in an area where you can get over-the-air signals.
Right.
I think they were, weren't they an antenna company before they were made a DVR? I think they're... The antennas are actually where they started. Remember the rabbit ears with elaborate metal, and then they had on the rabbit ears of like a tuner. I think that was a ChannelMaster, as I remember.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah, but now they've entered the 21st century. Yeah, but good. Well, I have not used it, so I do recommend it because I've heard good things from people in our chat room, and I'm glad you called and let us know that you like it.
Hey, I just wanted to let you know that I've been a longtime watcher back from the Screensaver days, and it's good to see you again on The Tech Guy.
I'm glad you found us. And we do the new Screensavers, you know, every Saturday afternoon now.
Yes, sir. I wish you'd bring Patrick Norton on.
He's been on. He's been my co-host. We'll bring him back soon. In fact, he's coming back in a couple of weeks. Patrick does a regular show on our podcast network called This Week in Computer Hardware. And yeah, you know, he has his own show on the Tech Thing, which is techthing.com. I tried to hire him, to be honest, when he was working at a company called Revision 3 that kind of shut down. He was doing Techzilla there. And when they shut down Techzilla, I said, Patrick, please join us. And he didn't. He really wants to do his own thing. I don't blame him. You know, everybody wants. Nowadays, everybody sees that there's an opportunity, thanks to the internet. You don't need a television network. You don't need anything. You just need a studio and a camera. In fact, if you're doing audio, you don't even need that. And YouTube, and it's free. So he's smart. He doesn't need me. I wanted him for old time's sake, but he does come by from time to time. Well, he's coming soon.
I will be looking for that.
All right. Hey, thanks. It's good to talk to you too. Thank you. Take care. For those who are saying, what are they talking about? In the good old days of 1998 through 2004, there was a 24-hour cable television channel called Tech TV. And I was one of the first employees there, created two of the shows on that network. One was called The Screensavers. That's the one I did with my friend Patrick Norton. And the other was called Call for Help. And I had been doing this show long before then. I started doing a call-in tech talk show in the early 90s, 91. And so when Tech TV launched, I really do think they thought, oh, you know, eventually it's going to be the high-dollar, high-produced, glossy shows that are going to be a hit. But we need, in the meantime, to fill time. Leo... I had this conversation. How many hours could you fill? I said, well, I do the radio show for 3 hours every day. I could easily do that. They said, good. I said, you mean do a call-in show on TV? They said, yes. I said, okay. Here's how we're going to do it. We'll do two shows. Because I think in my mind, and I think this is still true, there's people who discovered technology and computing as a business, as part of their work. You know, your first computer was at work and you learned a word processor and spreadsheets and that kind of thing. And your attitude, those people's attitude towards technology is more, it's a tool. It's a tool. It's something I use. It's not something I enjoy, but it's something I use. And then there's people, and this number's growing, isn't it, who first experience technology at home for fun, often gaming. Those people think of technology as toys. So we did two shows. We did a show for the tool folks. That's the Call for Help show. And we did a show for the toy folks. That was the screensavers. Nowadays, this show's for both, tools and toys. But you can sometimes hear most people now, I think, because everybody experiences technology at an early age, most of the young people coming up see it as a potentially fun. I mean, a smartphone is not a productivity tool for most people, right? It's social media. That has changed, right? It's not, gaming's there, certainly. But a lot of it is about social media. It's a communications device now. That's kind of new, thanks to the internet. 8888, ask Leo. Richard, Los Angeles, Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hi, Leo. Your new studio looks pretty much like a studio.
It looks exactly like the old studio. In fact, I bet you most people are saying, what new studio? If you're watching the stream. Yeah, we stream video of the show. What can I do for you?
One thing I've learned is that when I call my TV guys and my ISP, I give them a few minutes to go through their usual stuff about what I'm calling, and then I say, can I speak to a case manager? That works.
Ah, good tip.
That person usually knows almost everything you have to know.
Right.
And they'll take your case, and if they haven't solved your problem on the call, they'll get back to you if you set that all up.
Ah, very good. Very useful.
It's worked very well for me, at least with the two major ones that I have to deal with. Anyway, that's one way to get around some of the stuff you were talking about earlier.
Ask for a case manager. I used to ask for a supervisor, and that was just some other person with a notebook. Case manager,
right.
I like that.
They pick it up, and in fact, if you have a problem with one of my services, they'll give you a telephone number and a PIN to call.
Wow.
To call back if you're still having a problem. Wow. And I find that very helpful.
Hey, hang on for a bit, okay? Because I have to take a break. But we come back and I will be your case manager.
And, thank you.
Leo Laporte, the tech guy. I shall be your case manager today. My name is Bernardo. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. We'll just leave the story at that point. 8888. Ask Leo on with the call. Richard in L.A., nice to talk to you. What can I do for you today?
Well, I just was suggesting about getting to case managers.
Case manager,
call.
Yeah. I am your case manager.
They're very efficient in the two systems that I have to deal with, and I've had some very complicated problems with one. And then they not only heard me out and provided a solution, but as I started to say, they give you a special phone number with a PIN.
Mm.
So if you need to solve the problem further, you can just call them back.
Now, not every company is going to give you that kind of service, but it's worth a try. Absolutely. Absolutely.
Should I mention the companies?
Yeah, sure.
Time Warner.
Mm-hmm.
DirecTV.
Excellent. And you know what? That means that's a company that spent some money on support. And interesting because both of those are getting a monthly payment from you. The problem with computer companies is you bought the computer, now you're gone. The only thing you can do is whittle away their profit margin. So if you're paying a monthly fee, they're getting money from you every month, so they have a chance to make it back. But more importantly, they need to keep you as a customer. So I would say you're going to get better customer support from any company that you pay every month. And now I wish it were true of cell phone companies, but but it makes sense. The DirecTV, Time Warner, your cable company. I wish it were true of Comcast. Comcast is funny. I have a different trick with Comcast. I go to the Comcast store. So many towns actually have a storefront, and there are people in there. And I find that people are much more helpful if you're seeing them face-to-face. That makes sense. We're human. I've never had a bad experience in the store. Can't say the same for a phone. And now, of course, the new thing, and a lot of companies are trying this. Look, it's all about getting the cost of support down because that's expensive and it eats away their profit margin. They're trying chat, online chat. So Comcast and others do that. And the good thing for them is they don't always have to have a human at the other side of chat. So it's hard to tell, but a lot of the times on the chat, at least the first few back and forth conversations are with a robot, with a chatbot. And I think you're going to see more and more of that. I hate to say it. Mike San Diego, Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, Mike.
Hey, Leo. How you doing?
I'm great. What can I do for you?
So my Xbox One console is having connection issues with my home network. Everything else on my network works fine, but my Xbox will stay connected for about 30 minutes to an hour, or about one episode on Netflix.
and then it
disconnects.
Is it Wi-Fi or Ethernet?
Wi-Fi.
Yeah. It's
sad. And I've actually tried plugging my modem and router into hardwiring it, and that didn't work either.
Same problem?
Yep.
That's counterintuitive.
Yeah.
If it were a radio that's bad, the Wi-Fi radio is different from the Ethernet chip, so those aren't related. So, and it's different software too, so it would be unlikely that you'd have the same problem at that level. So it sounds like, golly.
Well, I actually got an error message when I was trying to reconnect one time.
Yeah.
And it popped up and it said there may be a problem with the console's wireless hardware.
Oh.
Try restarting it and wait a few minutes.
Yeah.
And
that's
my
probably
restart process is basically unplug everything and then wait 5 minutes.
Have you ever tried not changing anything on the Xbox, but just rebooting the router or restarting the router?
I did, and it connected for about an hour and a half, and then I went back to having the same issues.
Okay. So it's not the Xbox exactly. Because rebooting the router doesn't affect the Xbox, and yet it came back. What it is an issue with the DHCP lease. It's a software issue.
Okay.
When you first connect a device to a router, that's the box. It may be part of your cable modem box, or maybe a separate box you purchased that attaches to the cable modem. It's the thing that spreads the internet throughout the house to different devices. When you first connect to a router, you're assigned via the Dynamic Host Configuration Protocol, or DHCP, you're assigned with an IP address. And that IP address has a time to live, a lease time. It expires. It shouldn't expire so fast, but it sometimes does expire. And then the computer goes back to the router and says, hey, remind me again, what's my IP address? It sounds like that is an issue, and I think that's a known issue with the Xbox.
Okay.
So,
yeah, my question is, should I just upgrade and buy the Xbox One S, or should I send it into Microsoft and pay the $115 to send it in?
I don't think you need to do either. But if you Google Xbox One DHCP lease, you'll find a bunch of people talking about. Here's one forum post from January, constantly requesting IP address from DHCP. Here's another one from 4 years ago. Xbox Live disconnects every 15 to 30 minutes. There are a lot of these posts. And some of them actually have some suggestions for things you should do. I would do these before I would. It's not something wrong with your Xbox, but it is, okay. It is kind of a known issue. I would do these before I would. I'll put a link to this. This one is from Tom's Hardware. And it looks like it has some specific links to Xbox One DHCP issues. I wonder if there's a simple fix for this. Something like setting the time to live to be longer or something like that. I don't know if there's a fix.
Right.
Yeah. But apparently this is not unusual. And I think we've narrowed it down. The great diagnostic test you did was rebooting the router, and it fixed it. And that tells me right there, it's a DHCP lease issue.
Okay.
So I'd
have to go into my router settings and...
It may be that. I would Google it, DHCP lease Xbox One. You'll see a lot of posts and try some of the things they suggest.
Okay. Give that a shot.
I think it is in the router, and I think turning up a time to live on the lease would be good. So maybe the issue is kind of an interaction, like the Xbox One, when it loses its lease, isn't properly requesting a new one or isn't handling the new address well, things like that.
Yeah, because it'll just, like, I can be in the middle of anything and it'll just drop me out.
Yeah,
Yeah.
You're not connected to the internet.
Yeah. Yeah. I think you narrowed it down. It was smart detective work, rebooting the router.
Well, thank you.
Yeah, I don't think you need to send it in. I don't think you need to get a new router or talk to your cable company. It's an interaction of the two of those. So you know, this is pretty common if you search for it. You should find a good answer there. The Google is your friend. The trick is to know what to search for, right? Would you know to search for DHCP lease? No. And so this is where, you know, thinking about it, trying some things, and doing some diagnostics. You're really Sherlock Holmes when you're solving computer problems. What did he tell Watson? He said, Watson, I eliminate all the possibilities, and when I've done so, whatever remains, however improbable, is the cause. So, and the other corollary, Leo's corollary to that is do the easy stuff first. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. You know, I'm such fun today. Let's just keep this whole thing going. We have to record calls for my vacation in a month. So would you like to keep calling? All right, we'll keep the calls going for another hour after the show ends in half an hour. 8888-ASK. Leo, good time to call if it's hard to get through, and I know it is. The best time to do that is when we're pre-taping, and we'll be starting that in about half an hour. So if you're on the line, hang a line. I'll definitely get to every call on the line today. And if you're not, keep calling. We will get you in the next 45 minutes or to an hour. 8888-ASK-LEO. 888-827-5536. Susan is on the line from Hemet, California. Hi, Susan.
Yes, hello, Leo.
Hello, nice Susan.
Yeah, hi. I was just wondering, I've been listening to you for a while, and I really want to get a Chromebook, but everyone I see is 11 inches. They're not very big.
Oh, they make bigger ones now. So the best way to shop Chromebooks might be going to Amazon, where you're going to have the biggest selection. It's their number one selling computer. Go ahead.
Say that again?
It's the number one selling laptop on Amazon is Chromebooks.
Okay. Well, do you know anything about the Hewlett-Packard black licorice laptop?
That I've never heard of. Black licorice? Really?
Hewlett-Packard black licorice 15.6-inch laptop with
No, it's Windows 10. Don't get it. Please get a Chromebook. You can get a bigger screen. Please don't do this.
Okay, I'll try to find
it. Please, I beg of you. So Dell makes 15-inch. There are 15-inch Chromebooks. Is 15 big enough for you?
Yeah, did you say Dell makes them?
Dell makes them. Acer makes them. Acer makes a Chromebook 15. That's quite nice.
Okay.
If you're going to get a Chromebook, I would get a touch screen if you can, because starting in a month, Google is going to put the Android store on Chromebooks. That means any app that you can use on an Android phone, you'll be able to use on your Chromebook too.
That was the thing I was going to say.
Yeah, I know. Isn't that awesome? But yeah, touch will be a big help.
I just got a Samsung Galaxy Tab S2.
Yeah.
And I haven't even opened it yet because I want to get the OtterBox before I even open it.
Smart, but you'll even be able to do all of those things you do on the Tab on a Chromebook. So there are a lot of 15-inch. If you search for 15-inch Chromebook, you could just Google it.
Okay.
Dell makes excellent ones. Acer makes a very nice one. Samsung makes a nice one. There, you can get all the way up to 15 inches. And yes, they're just the same price as the black licorice. That black licorice is junk. Do not.
Okay, thank you. You really helped a lot.
Yeah.
You know, I have an Echo Tank printer.
Oh, you like the Epson?
Yes, the Epson 4550.
Yeah.
Echo Tank printer.
That's our advertiser. Yeah.
What?
That's our advertiser.
Absolutely. That's how I found out about it. That's why I bought it. I love this printer. The only thing is that I accidentally changed the size of the page, and I couldn't get it back. So I called this phone number that was in with my printer.
Yeah.
And it turns out that these people are called. I want to see if you've heard of this company before, and I have a reason for asking you this. It's called WeFix LLC, and it's a tech support company. And a security company also.
Huh. They're out of Houston.
What you were describing about an hour ago about how someone let someone go on their computer with TeamViewer.
Yeah. That's different. It's okay. Yeah. That's okay. Because you called them and you used the phone number that came with your printer. So that's okay.
Okay, good. Because I'm paying them $200 for 5 years of service.
Well, that's a good deal.
That's what I thought, too. And I wanted to run that by you.
No, that's okay. Because this is somebody Epson recommended in the box.
Exactly.
And you called them. What you don't want is the person who calls you and says, oh, I see you have a problem. That's not good.
Okay, I see.
But yeah, often a good tech guy, I would do this if, you know, I had unlimited time and it wasn't a radio show, will use TeamViewer or something like that to get into your computer because they need to. It saves them a trip to your house.
Yes, and you know, they sent me out through my Echo Tank printer a configuration status sheet on my printer.
Nice.
And they're very helpful.
Yeah, they can do that because they have access to your system. Now,
exactly.
Well, anyway, just so I don't get in trouble with the Federal Trade Commission, I didn't set you up. I didn't pay you $25 to call and recommend an advertiser or anything like that, right?
Right.
Obviously.
No, it wasn't anything like that.
Thank you.
So much, though, I will not get a black licorice. Thank
Please.
You for telling me.
Yeah, not because they're not an advertiser. I have an HP laptop. I love the HP Spectre 13T, but it's $1,300, $1,400. Do not get a cheap HP laptop at Walmart. That's like just, you'll be calling me. You'll be calling me all the time.
Yes, I'm thinking of a computer class at the college near my house.
Great idea. Look, yes. I don't have anything against using Windows 10. If you want to become a computer expert, that's fine. But the problem is a lot of people are buying it who don't want to, you know, mess around with computers. They just want it to work, and that's a bad choice.
Right, right. Yeah, you know this instructor, she's telling people to go to Walmart and get a HP.
Oh, gosh. Well, it's cheap. You know, I understand. No, people don't want to.
It's cheap. That's what it is.
It's cheap.
No, I'm going to get a Chromebook.
Chromebook is much better for – if you're going to get an inexpensive computer, a Chromebook is a much better choice.
Which is the best one – again, I'm sorry to go over this again, but just real quickly. Which is the best one that they're going to have – Android on?
Well, almost all of the new ones will have Android, but get one with a touch screen. It's not a requirement, but it makes it much easier because many Android apps expect you to have touch.
Yes. Yes, because I have an Android phone, so that will be good for me.
Yeah.
Okay.
Good for you. Good for you. I am glad to hear it's all going so well.
Thank you so much. I do love my Echo Tank printer. I love it.
Well, you know, one of the issues, of course, is you go and there's a little sticker shock because it's more expensive, but then you have to do the math and say, "But I'm not going to be buying cartridges for 2 years."
That's right. And
that's the exactly that's the trade off.
You just pour it in the tank.
I know we have two.
I know.
My wife, that's all she'll buy now. All right. Well, again, they're a sponsor, but thank you, Epson, for making a great product, and I would say that either way.
Thank you, Leo, for being there for all of us.
Anytime, Susan. All right.
Thank
the best.
Bye-bye.
Take care. Aw. I did not pay her. I did not set her up. I've never met that woman in my life. I've never even been to Hemet. Although now I have many friends in Hemet, so I should probably go visit. Trevor in Hawthorne, California. Hi, Trevor.
Hi. Good morning. How are you? Good afternoon. How are
you? Yeah, it was morning when we started, wasn't it? I'm sorry to keep you up so long. You're very patient. Thank you.
No problem. Thank you so much. First of all, I just love listening to your show. I'm a computer tech myself, so, you know, I've done a lot of desktop support, and now I'm doing digital camera support. So you can talk tech with me. But, you know, sometimes techs need tech. And so here.
All right, tech. Hold on a sec, because ads are coming at me right now at the speed of light. But we will be back in a moment, and I'll take your call. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Actually, tech teacher, it's Chrome, a browser, but it's also a Linux. It's actually probably the easiest to use Linux distro out there. So I think you would do some benefit to your students if you mentioned that, yes, it's great to learn how to use Windows or a Mac, but if you don't want to, And all you want to do is surf the web and do email, which is probably 99% of the computer-using populace, a Chromebook really would be a lot easier for you. You know, I mean, I use, you know, here's a Surface Book. Here's a Dell running Linux. Here's a Macintosh. I obviously use them all, but I'm a tech enthusiast. Of course I use them all. I'm speaking to people who really don't want to become
you know, tech gurus. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. 8888 Ask Leo. Once again, we're going to keep going. We're going to keep answering calls for another hour. So keep those calls coming in at 8888 Ask Leo. Even after the show goes off the air, I will continue to take your calls and answer your questions. We're pre-recording for my vacation coming up in a month. Trevor on the line from Hawthorne. Sorry, I had to cut you off. Trevor's a tech guy, but even tech guys need help. I need help all the time. Trevor, that's why I have my chat room. They're great. So what can we do to help you?
Absolutely. So just bear with me for a minute here. I'm listening. I'm not near my radio, so I'll take your answer on the phone here.
Yeah, of course.
Okay. I just didn't want them to hang up on me or
something. I promise I won't hang up on you until I have to.
Okay. All right. Well, that's easy to do in today's world when, you know, anonymity. So, no, I appreciate you. Just before I ask my question, just as a pointer to the last guy or a couple of guys ago that with the router and Xbox.
Yeah.
One little tip for him, I always like to check as a tech is firmware. So he might want to check the firmware on his router or router, make sure it's up to date, and if not, then update that via the internet.
I wish, you know, this is a problem because a lot of consumer grade routers never update their firmware, even with security flaws. They just don't bother. They think of themselves as, you know, you bought it, that's fine, it was $40. I'm looking at you, Linksys. And I'm never going to upgrade this again. But you're right. Absolutely. Check for router firmware updates. And the same goes for your computer. You're absolutely right.
Well, a computer, I mean, as we both know, you know, Windows updates and it's just 10 and 7 and anything, those go and grab that stuff even with...
updating is good. Yeah.
Those do those automatically when you have it turned on, but firmware is never going to update. Well, some of them do actually. Some of the routers actually do update automatically, but not and most of them don't. And you have to, even for them to update automatically, you got to click. They just don't.
Let's cut to the chase because I am going to run out of time and I want you to ask your question. So what's going on?
Okay. I'm so sorry. So my question is two parts. So I'm looking at a new TV. And Samsung, they have a great resolution. And I have one friend that has a curved screen, another has a flat screen. They both, you know, each like their respective TV. What's the benefit of the curved?
You want to know the benefit of the curved? We have curved screens. That's the benefit. There is no benefit. In fact, there's a detriment because, and I have a curved Samsung. I spent a lot of money on a Samsung OLED. They didn't have a choice, so I had to buy the curved. You know what's bad about curved? If there's any reflections, it goes right across the whole screen. It's the worst. If there's a reflection on a flat screen, it's just there. On a curved screen, it reflects one window, the whole screen. So don't get a curved screen. There's no benefit to a curved screen. It's marketing. It's to make it look different and maybe to convince some people that there is a benefit. Sometimes they say, well, you get a wider angle of... It's terrible. In fact, it makes it worse for people sitting on the side, right? So my new OLED TV from LG, they make curved and flat, and I bought flat.
Okay. And then my second part is, should I buy 4K? Is it going to matter because I'm only grabbing OTA programming?
Yeah, it will matter. Well, if you're only getting OTA ever, you're never going to get a disc player or a stream. You sure?
Well, I might.
Yeah, you might. You know, I get a Roku all of a sudden. There's 4K UHD content on Netflix and other places that actually, at first I poo-pooed it. I thought, well, they're streaming it. How good could it be? But if you have enough bandwidth, it can be really good. 4K makes a big difference. I'm not saying get it because you're absolutely right. There's not a lot of 4K content and there's zero 4K content over the air. And that may be that way for some time. I don't know what the plans are for television stations to improve to. It was enough to get them to 1080p. But 4K looks great. I never was a big deal on 3D. I thought that was a gimmick. I'm quick to point out if it's a gimmick, 4K and UHD are not gimmicks. They're significantly improved visuals. And in a year, you know, a lot of stuff will be 4K. I bought the Xbox One S because that has a UHD Blu-ray 4K player in it. It was a cheap way to get that. And I've been watching, there's only a handful of UHD movies, but boy, they look good. Now, the only reason to get 4K and UHD is if you're close enough to the TV to make difference. So if you're 10 feet back on a 55-inch screen, you won't know between 1080p and 4K. It's really how close you are you going to see the dots? And as a tech guy, I think you would understand that, right? It's very much has to do with the size of the screen, how close you are.
Sure. And just I'm sorry, just one more while
sure.
your answer on this one. I just recently bought a cheap. It was a cheap off-brand 55-inch at Fry's, and I don't like it at all. Is there a significant drop in quality between, say, Samsung that's going to be $800 and this cheap one?
Yeah, where cheap ones compromise often is on the DSP chips and the software. The panel may be a bad panel. That may be one way they got cheap. But a lot of times the panels, there are only a handful of panel manufacturers out of Japan and Korea. So you're mostly Korea. So the chances are, you know, it's not going to be a lot of difference on the panel itself, but the software running it, the DSPs built in, that's where they'll sacrifice. And I tell you where you really lose on a cheap TV is upscaling. So lower quality, standard definition content on a bad TV is going to really look terrible because they're not putting a good upscaler in there to make it look better. That makes a huge difference. So you kind of get what you pay for, but remember, like with all electronics, you're also paying for brand name. That's why I often tell people who want to save money, go with Vizio, because you're not paying for the brand name, you're paying for the TV, and they make quite good TVs for less. Our home theater guru, Scott Wilkinson's on every Saturday at 11:30. That, tune in for that, or read his stuff at avsforum.com. He's really good, I think, at talking about the pros and cons, and I don't think he's sold into the mythos, right? He's pretty straight about how all this stuff is and whether it's good or not. And I think he'd agree with me. The curved screen, it's just marketing. Now, I have time for one more call before the end of the show. But again, I'm going to keep taking calls for the next hour. So keep calling. We're recording ahead. Tom, Warren, Ohio. Hi, Tom. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hi, Leo. How are you doing this?
I'm great. How are you?
Oh, we're just doing some shade tree car washing under the huge oak tree over here in the backyard.
Oh, how nice. I wish we had water in California. That would be fun.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I was out there a couple of years ago. I was able to visit your old studio, and I'm going to visit the new one, too.
Good. Please come see the new one, yeah. And bring some water. Just a bucket would help.
Yeah, I'll bring a water bottle. How's that?
That'd be great.
Yeah, anyway, my brother has an iPod, and we were discussing it last night about what to do, like if you can do FaceTime on there. Is there anything else you can do as far as calling? I know you recommended Talkatone before.
Yeah, if it's an iPod Touch. If it's an iPod Touch.
Yes, iPod Touch.
It's basically an iPhone minus the phone. And that means you can do internet calling on it. So Skype would work on it. Tango would work on it. WhatsApp, Facebook.
Oh, Tango, yeah, okay.
Yeah. Nowadays, okay. Video calling comes with everything. It practically comes in the Cap'n Crunch box. So all you have to do is get an app that supports video calling. Now, the problem with WhatsApp and Skype and the other, is generally you're calling somebody who's running that program on the other end. But right. Some systems like Tango, like Viber is another one, like Skype, allow you to buy outbound calls to regular phones. It costs you money, usually a lot less than a phone. When my daughter went to France, for instance, I bought for $99 unlimited calling via Skype from France to any phone number in the United States. And that was $99 for a year. That was a great deal. Now, I don't know what they charge these days, but you want Skype out. That's what they call it. Tango, Viber, and others do the same thing. They basically give you phone capability on a Wi-Fi device. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Have a great geek week and keep calling. Well, that's it for the Tech Guy Show for today. Thank you so much for being here. And don't forget, it's just the tip of the iceberg. We do nearly 30 shows on the Netcast Network. It's called TWIT, T-W-I-T. It stands for This Week in Tech, and you'll find it at twit.tv, including the podcasts for this show. We talk about Windows on Windows Weekly, Macintosh on Mac Break Weekly, iPads, iPhones, Apple Watches on iOS Today, Security on Security Now. I mean, I can go on and on. And on. You even get your daily dose of tech news with Tech News Today. And of course, the big show every Sunday afternoon, This Week in Tech. You'll find it all at twit.tv. And I'll be back next week with another great Tech Guy show. Thanks for joining me. We'll see you next time.